Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We've all had a moment like this, haven't we? Unexpectedly, out of the blue, you're going about your business during the day. Perhaps you're at work or at the store or you're talking with a friend. And they begin to raise objections about the Christian faith. More often than not, these objections may come from unbelievers or people who are on the periphery of the Christian faith. More and more today, we find these objections, we'll be talking about them during this hour, coming from people who stand within at least the visible pale of Christianity. Is the Bible just another story that is open to whatever interpretation you want to put on it? Are the Gospels, are they reliable documents, or are they just the product of the pious imaginations of men who were so grieved by the loss of their master, Jesus? Is the church full of hypocrites? There seems to be history to back that up. What about science and Christianity? Are they interacting to the point where Christianity has basically been reduced to popular myth? We'll answer those objections during this hour of Issues Etc. with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. We are coming to you live this Sunday evening, November the 23rd. Issues Etc. is a live call-in program. Our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. During an hour like this, atheists, agnostics, other non-Christians, we will give you top priority. 1-800-730-2727. You can also post a question or a comment on our Issues Etc. forum. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org. When you get there, click on the What's New section, and there you'll find the Issues Etc. forum for your questions and your comments for Dr. Montgomery during this hour as we answer the objections of unbelievers. Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is a regular guest here on Issues Etc. He is Professor Emeritus at the University of Luton in England, a French advocate, barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's Distinguished Professor of Apologetics and the History of Christian Thought at Trinity College and Theological Seminary in Newburgh, Indiana, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including his latest, some people are calling this his greatest, Tractatus Logico Theologicus. I'll tell you a little bit more about that book later in the hour. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Always a great pleasure.
Dr. Montgomery, we lost a personal friend, a mutual friend, and a great defender of the Christian faith in the middle of last week with the death of Bob Passantino. Give us your thoughts on Bob.
Well, he was one of the strongest defenders of the faith in Southern California. I knew him and his wife, Gretchen. We've known each other for years, and it's a great loss. I have a whole list of people that I would have preferred to move into the next world ahead of Bob, but evidently the Lord's list is not my list, and we can only praise the Lord for the way in which he used Bob across the years, and I know that Gretchen will continue the ministry that both of them had together.
And that is an encouragement to know that she's determined to do that as well. Folks, I'd like you to keep Gretchen Passantino and Bob and Gretchen's three kids, Mary, Karen, and Paul, in your prayers, as I'm sure Dr. Montgomery will as well. Dr. Montgomery, you are an accomplished attorney. What's the best evidence to support the truth claims of Christianity?
Best evidence is the eyewitness testimony to a resurrected Jesus after Easter. That is to say, we start with the fact that Jesus predicted that he would rise again from the dead. And then we look at sound historical documents written by eyewitnesses or close associates of eyewitnesses, and we see the powerful evidence that he rose again from the dead exactly as he predicted. And that then establishes the truth of his claim to be no less than God come to earth, to die for the sins of the world, to rise again for our justification. That's the central evidence for the truth of the Christian faith. We move from there on into all sorts of issues, but any non-Christian must face that evidence.
In an age where everybody's got their story, the postmodernists call it their meta-narrative, we often hear the objection that the Bible is just another story, and it's open to different interpretations. How do you respond to this kind of ambiguous objection to the truth claims of Christianity?
Well, it's interesting that stories usually identify themselves as no more than that. Thus, folk tales begin once upon a time. You know, that's true in all languages. In French, il y a une fois. But the gospel story begins and ends in history. In the days of Caesar Augustus, a decree went out that all the world should be taxed, and the taxing occurred when Cyrenius was governor of Syria. This is embedded solidly in historical reality, and therefore this is not just someone telling his own story. This is the kind of thing that one has to come to terms with, because that's the way it is. And if people refuse to come to terms with this, then of course there are consequences.
So in that sense, Scripture's testimony differs very widely from something like Homer's Iliad or the Odyssey, that has places where that you can't find on maps, that has an indeterminate time for the story, things like that.
Yes, that's true. Now, of course, there have been attempts archaeologically to locate places that are mentioned in the Iliad and the Odyssey. Schliemann in the 19th century thought he had found Troy, and maybe he did. But that's very different from a narrative where you have the life of an individual taking place in contact with a civilization, with eyewitness testimony as to what he did, and where one can't avoid the conclusion that this is, in one sense, an ordinary life about which one can get solid information. The difference, of course, is that in the case of Jesus, you have a person who not only claims to be God, but provides overwhelming evidence that that's exactly the person he was.
The next thing that the postmodernist might say is, fine, I understand that these are historical documents, but still they're open to interpretation. They can mean whatever I want them to mean. How do you respond?
Well, of course, the response is that if that were the case, then we don't understand what the postmodernist has just said, because, after all, there are an infinite number of interpretations of the point that he just made. This is a two-edged sword. The fact of the matter is that unless statements mean what they appear to mean, and unless they have an objective sense, then there's no way that you could objectively criticize what someone else is saying.
Let's talk about and narrow our focus, if we could, Dr. Montgomery, to the New Testament documents, beginning with the Gospels themselves. You've alluded to this a little bit, and that is someone might object by saying, look, the New Testament writings were written so late as to be, even though they make historical references, to be kind of disconnected from any actual history. They don't represent actual events, but maybe the pious remembrances or longings of those who wrote those documents.
Well, the only ground for saying that the New Testament documents were written late, after 70 AD, after the fall of Jerusalem, is the principle that liberal theologians use, that there can't be any valid prophecy or prediction. And since in these gospel records the fall of Jerusalem is set forth in great detail, the liberal theologian says, well, obviously these gospels must have been written after the fall of Jerusalem, and the writers then put back into Jesus' mouth the prediction. This is just ridiculous. This isn't the way you do history. Nobody knows ahead of time whether prediction is possible or not. What you have to do is to date documents by objective standards, not by your own philosophical conclusions as to what's possible and what isn't. And the way we date these documents, for example, this is a point made by Adolf von Harnack at the end of the 19th century, that the Book of Acts ends before the death of Paul. Paul's still alive, but Paul is the central figure of Acts. Paul is alive in Rome when the Book of Acts ends. So obviously the Book of Acts was written before his death. Had the author known about his death, that would have been included. So that pushes the Book of Acts before 64-65, because we know independently that that's when Paul died, of the Neronian persecution. Well, Acts is part two of Luke. So Luke, that gospel, was written prior to Acts. And Luke says in verses 1 through 4 that he used sound prior material in preparing his gospel. And everybody agrees that Mark, Gospel of Mark, was one of his sources. So Mark was written before Luke. And of course, Matthew ties into this also, but in a more complex way. Jesus died around about 30 AD. Well, that means that that Mark and Luke, two of the Gospels, including the very first one, and undoubtedly Matthew, must have been written between 30 and 64, 65. That's within 35 years maximum of the end of Jesus' earthly career. Now, that establishes the fact that these documents are really early. They're within a generation of the events, and people were still alive who had had contact with those events, including hostile witnesses, Jewish religious leaders who had the means, motive, and opportunity to blow the whistle on all of this if it hadn't been true. And since they didn't, it's clear that they couldn't.
Dr. John Warg Montgomery is our guest. We're talking about answering the objections of unbelievers. One more question on that when we come back, and that is, someone might say, yeah, but how do we know we've really got the documents themselves? How do we know they haven't been redacted 100 times or retranslated? We'll get to that when we come back.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you to pay the production salaries and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to prayerfully consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You can donate by credit card, 1-800-737-0172. Or you can donate by check, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Next week on Issues Etc., we're going to discuss Christian Zionism with Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine. Why are so many American evangelicals fiercely loyal to the state of Israel? Is the modern state of Israel the Israel of Bible prophecy? Has God blessed the United States because of its support for the modern state of Israel? We'll talk about it next week on Issues Etc. with Aaron Wolf as our guest. If you'd like to know what we'll be discussing in the weeks ahead, check out our website, issuesetc.org. And while you're there, you can read several articles written by our guest in this hour, Dr. John Warg Montgomery, on the subject of defending the Christian faith, issuesetc.org. Now, if you have a question or a comment on answering these objections of unbelievers, feel free to give us a call. If you have an objection of your own that we don't cover in the course of this conversation, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. Picking up on something you had just finished talking about before the break, Dr. Montgomery, tell us a little bit about the manuscript evidence for the New Testament.
Well, in the case of other documents of the classical world, Caesar's Gallic Wars, Aristotle's philosophy, Herodotus' history, that sort of thing, the distance between the writing and the first complete text that we have averages about 1,000 years, and it can be much longer than that. The Roman poet Catullus, for example, it's 1,550 years, and we've lost the chief manuscript that was relied upon during the Italian Renaissance to give us our understanding of that poet. Now, in the case of the New Testament documents, as Sir Frederick Kenyon said, the greatest authority in this area in the 20th century, we have the earliest full texts in relation to the writing of the New Testament as compared with all other documents of the classical world. There, the maximum time is about 350 years, and those 350 years are completely bridged with lectionary readings, quotations, and the like, so that we could practically reproduce the gospel materials, even if we didn't have those complete texts, Codex Sinaiticus, Codex Vaticanus, and so forth. This means that if anybody wants to throw out the New Testament on textual grounds, before he does this, he has literally to dump his entire knowledge of the classical world. Nobody is willing to do this, and therefore it is perfectly clear that those who try to get rid of the New Testament have a personal prejudice against it, or putting it another way, they're threatened by it, and they are therefore dealing with it in an irrational manner, in a way in which they would never deal with the other materials by which we know the history of Greece and Rome.
All right, let's take another approach then that an objector to the truth claims of Christianity might himself take. And this is a little more historical. The church, as evidenced by history, the Crusades, some very serious missteps in other great world tragedies, scandals, ancient and modern, of which there are many examples, the church is full of hypocrites. How do you respond to this objection?
Well, there are really two points to make there. The first is that I suppose the best thing for a hypocrite is to have contact with Jesus Christ in order to correct that problem. So we'd rather have the hypocrites in the church than outside for their own sake. But wholly apart from that, the truth of Christianity, of course, doesn't depend upon the fellow travelers. When I was in Australia a number of years ago, I debated the president of the Atheists and Skeptics of Australia. And in this debate in Sydney, the president of the Atheists and Skeptics kept going back again and again to greasy American evangelists who allegedly were coming to Australia attempting to siphon money off. And I kept endeavoring to get him to face the question of whether Christianity was true, apart from greasy evangelists, American or otherwise. And it didn't seem that I could do anything to bring him back to the real point. Finally, it came to me. It was an inspiration with a small I. I said, listen, suppose they had caught Einstein shoplifting. Would that mean that E no longer equaled MC squared? And suddenly the audience caught the point. The truth of what Einstein said would not depend upon his personal character. The truth depended upon whether what he said was correct. And in the case of Christianity, we're not promoting the Crusaders. We're not promoting the TV evangelists. What we're doing is directing people to Jesus Christ. And Jesus does not guarantee that everybody who says he's a Christian is necessarily a Christian. What's the old black adage? All them that's talking about heaven ain't necessarily a going there. So we concentrate on Jesus himself, whether his claims are sound, and if they are, then he offers the opportunity for a changed life, and anyone can have this. That changed life is even available to hypocrites.
With a minute and a half before we have to go to another break, Dr. Montgomery, some will say, look at the proliferation of denominations and church bodies. The church seems rather schismatic. Christians themselves can't even agree on the truth claims of their own faith. Your response?
Well, the common ground of all denominations is infinitely more important than their differences. All genuinely Christian churches hold to the Apostles' Creed, Nicene Creed, Athanasian Creed. These are the historic creeds of the church that present Jesus as God Almighty. They present him as one of the persons of the Trinity, that he died on the cross, rose again for us. He will be coming again to judge the quick and the dead. Now, agreed that there are minor differences among these churches. Some of them dunk the individual in baptism. Some of them sprinkle the individual in baptism. Some of them are organized in a democratic fashion. Some are organized in a hierarchical fashion. But surely those differences are trivial in comparison with the commonality that exists in all Christian denominations.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. He's Professor Emeritus at the University of Luton in England, French advocate, barrister at law in England and Wales, and member of the Bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's Distinguished Professor of Apologetics and the History of Christian Thought at Trinity College and Theological Seminary in Newburgh, Indiana. He has authored and edited more than 50 books, including Tractatus Logico Theologicus. This is the latest of his books. You can purchase it directly through our radio program. We'll send you the book for a contribution of $42 to Issues, etc. That price does include shipping and handling. Just have your MasterCard, your Visa, or your Discover card ready, and call the Issues, etc. resource line. Here it is, 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. The book you ask for is called Tractatus Logico Theologicus, or just ask for the latest from Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. You can also make a $40 check payable to Issues, etc., and mail it to Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Yes, the commonalities, without a doubt, among Christian, Orthodox Christian denominations, confessions, groups, by far outweigh the differences, not to diminish the differences. But just because Christians disagree, even if every Christian disagreed on most things, would still not disprove the truth claims. Christians can and will disagree. There's no doubt about that. That doesn't mean there isn't a truth to be discerned. When we come back, what about science? The age of science has come. It has ascended. Some have already declared Christianity a mere popular myth because science has shown it all to be, well, just that, mythology. We'll get Dr. Montgomery's response to that objection on the other side of the break. Stay with us. Are you looking for a reliable, Christ-centered guide for your daily devotional life? Instead of spending 40 days concentrating on your purpose with Rick Warren, why not spend those days meditating on God's mercy with Johann Gerhardt? Hi, I'm Todd Wilkin. Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for November is called Meditations on Divine Mercy by Johann Gerhardt. It's translated by Pastor Matt Harrison. You can order Meditations on Divine Mercy by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You'll find more information on our Issues, Etc. book of the month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy. 1-800-325-3040, issuesetc.org.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
I'm Todd Wilkin. We're joined by Pastor Matt Harrison, Executive Director of LCMS World Relief and translator for our Issues, Etc. book of the month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy by Johann Gerhardt. Matt, who is Johann Gerhardt?
Johann Gerhardt was a Christian, a teacher, a thinker, a theologian, a Lutheran theologian of the 17th century, the early 17th century. And behind Martin Luther, a lot of people say he is behind Luther and Martin Chemnitz, the third, after which there is no fourth. He was so significant in Protestantism in Europe in the 17th century.
So how can the writings of an early 17th century theologian be relevant today?
I think, you know, in this case, they're extremely relevant precisely because they're not from our time. You know as well as I do, Todd, that there's a rush for relevance everywhere today. And in that rush, the result is most often, quite often, a real triteness, a transitoriness of materials today, the latest fad. And I think the brilliance of the older writings is they pull us to really fundamentally important truths of the Christian faith that have been universally true since Christ himself.
So what's wrong with much of devotional material today?
I think there's a lot of good devotional material today. On the other hand, a lot of devotional material today is geared more toward making me feel good about myself and feel good about others, instead of really digging deeper to the fundamental bases of the Christian faith, dealing in a really serious way with sin and my own carnal desires, dealing in a serious way with God's remedy and giving us the gospel full force. And I think that's what this great devotional work does.
You can order Meditations on Divine Mercy by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website, issuesetc.org, click on the What's New section, and you'll find information on the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Meditations on Divine Mercy. When you call or write, mention Issues Etc., the book, Meditations on Divine Mercy, 1-800-325-3040, issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, answering the objections of unbelievers. Now, We take great pride at Issues Etc. in being able to play a small part in a task that is extremely important today in the church. We put it in terms of equipping the priesthood of all believers. It's really about educating the Christian layperson. There are two forces in the church at work today. One is attempting to teach and to catechize and instruct the laity in the truth claims of the Christian faith, in sound Reformation doctrine. The other is attempting to dumb down the laity by withholding not only important truth claims from them, but also good sound theology as well. The church has, you know what the Reformation was about, largely? It wasn't the product of one man, Martin Luther. It was, in many ways, a lay movement. Not entirely, but in many ways, a lay movement. People who found Luther's ideas, who read the scriptures that Luther put into their hands in their language, and suddenly the church was changed irrevocably. The laity, an educated, well-informed, and grounded in sound theology, laity. Now, if you share our commitment to educate the laity, please consider supporting Issues Etc. by becoming a monthly contributor or by making a year-end tax-deductible gift. To find out how you can become one of those monthly contributors to Issues Etc. at the level of confessor, apologist, or reformer, just go to our website, issuesetc.org. You'll find there a What's New section. Click on that, or just see page 8 of our latest Issues Etc. journal. You can donate by check to Issues Etc. The address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. You can also donate online, the website, you've heard it before, here it is again, issuesetc.org, or you can support our worldwide outreach by making a credit card donation, the resource line number 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. Dr. Montgomery, to another objection, this one having to do with science. It might be asserted by someone that science has superseded Christianity. The truth claims of science now have rendered the truth claims of Christianity null and void, because Christianity is essentially, in the face of science, been proven a myth.
Well, you have to distinguish two things here. You have to distinguish scientific method from the religion of science. Now, when someone appears on television in a white coat, this is some years back because, of course, cigarette advertising is not allowed on television anymore, but this person appears in a white coat with a stethoscope, and someone asks him, "What cigarette do you smoke, doctor?" And he says, "Puffies, of course." And then the camera quickly swings away from him because he's spitting blood into a basin. He's in the last stages of lung cancer. In a situation like that, what they're trying to do is to impress you with science, that the scientist is somehow able to make ethical, moral, and general judgments about everything. This is a lot of nonsense. The scientist properly is a humble individual who uses scientific method, which consists of analyzing data, hypothesizing as to the significance of it, testing the hypotheses against additional data, drawing conclusions, and gradually the information rises from an hypothesis to a theory and then perhaps to a general law. But the scientist is limited to the data. The data of the world, the facts of the world, are properly the limits of what the scientist is able to work with. Now, under those circumstances, Christianity has nothing to fear whatsoever from science. When we talked about the evidence for career of Jesus, for his death and resurrection, we were relying on historical evidence, and historical evidence is scientific in the sense that we gather it, we hypothesize as to its meaning, and we draw conclusions. The only difference, really, that most people think of is that science involves laboratories and repeatable experiments. But, of course, with history, you can't repeat. History doesn't repeat in that sense, and you can't, put Napoleon into a laboratory experiment. You can't boil him over a low flame. The fact of the matter is that we can demonstrate that Napoleon lost the Battle of Waterloo as a clear, objective fact. You could call it a scientific fact, if you wish, as well as a historical fact. Christianity doesn't fear science. What it will not tolerate is the scientist passing himself off as the grand poobah, as a guru who can declare on matters simply because he happens to wear a white coat.
Now, on that subject, and you mentioned the data several times, it's been pointed out by other guests on this program that science is often guilty, at least in the Western world, of really playing fast and loose with the data, not by what it presents, by what it fails to present, that science has fallen into the habit of excluding data that doesn't fit into a naturalistic worldview.
Well, there certainly is some truth in that. For example, there are scientists, as there are historians, who will not even consider the possibility of a miracle. Some years ago, I gave a critique of a work by a University of Chicago professor. This book was entitled The Rise of the West, and I did this at the American Historical Association. And I said, this man will not deal with the origins of Christianity and explain why Christianity succeeded while the mystery religions and other competing ideologies failed in the first three centuries, the end of the Roman Empire. And the historian responded, well, granted, in the records we have the resurrection of Jesus Christ given as the reason. He said, but I can't deal with that because historians can't deal with the miraculous. And I said, really? I thought historians could deal with anything for which there was sound testimonial evidence. I said, it seems to me that your problem is that you have already concluded that miracles can't happen, and therefore they're not a subject of investigation. And there are scientists who will not consider this sort of thing. But then that makes them the poorer as scientists, because a scientist needs to be willing to face the data even if the consequences are not what he wanted, or even if he can't understand the consequences. Good illustration of this, by the way, is the nature of light. You know, if you subject light to two equally good sets of experiments, it turns out to be wave-like and also to have mass as a particle. But these are certainly contradictory. Waves don't have mass, and particles do. So what does a good scientist do? He doesn't shove half the data under the rug. What he does is to simply name this thing. He calls it the photon, the wave hyphen particle. He doesn't understand it, but he then goes his way. And that's exactly what you do when you come across evidence for a miracle. You've got to accept what has in fact happened, even if it makes you uncomfortable, even if it changes your narrow view of the world.
Here is the final objection that we'll deal with formally during this hour of the conversation, Dr. Montgomery, and it is often played as the ace in the Trump suit, usually called the problem of evil, and some have simply accepted that it's an insoluble problem, and that is, if God is all-powerful, if God is good, then how can it be that there is such great evil in the world? Because there is such great evil in the world, therefore, God is not only not all-powerful and not all-good, he simply doesn't exist, therefore the true claims of Christianity are baseless.
Well, 2 points on this. The first is that if this objection is raised by a non-Christian, and it invariably is, the question is, where does the non-Christian get his standards of good and evil? You know, you don't have any absolute standards of good and evil unless they derive from an absolute source. So you need, first of all, to believe in an absolute God and a God who reveals the nature of good and evil before you have any solid basis for talking about this. So the non-Christian is in a very, very poor position to criticize the God of the Bible on this basis. But secondly, the source of evil happens to be the misuse of free will. It isn't that God created evil. It's that God, in his love, made his creatures so that they could voluntarily enter into a fellowship with him or not. Free will means exactly that. It's the uncaused ability to choose. And that means, of course, that there's the possibility of choosing wrongly. And as a result of God's creatures choosing wrongly, the evils, plural, that we find in the world exist. That's not because God likes evil or created it. It's because a God of love wants genuine fellowship with his creatures, and that's not possible unless we have a free choice. Any parent knows this. You can't force a child to love you. Any lover knows this. You can't force the other person to love you. It's got to be voluntary, and there are always negative consequences. If the child refuses the love of the parent, he can destroy himself, and there's nothing ultimately the parent can do about it. You can't put children or lovers in boxes and treat them as if they were puppets. And so when the non-Christian wants to have a universe in which there is no possibility of evil, for goodness sake, what he's really asking for is a universe in which there is no love whatsoever.
Folks, I'd like to hear from you on this issue. What kind of objections have you been given when discussing the truth claims of Christianity with others? Perhaps someone listening, an atheist and agnostic, or simply just a plain old skeptic, has one that we haven't dealt with in this hour. I'd like to hear from you. Give us a call during this break, 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. That's our call-in number. You can also post a question or a comment or an objection on our Issues Etc. forum. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section, and when you do, you'll find the Issues Etc. forum waiting there for your questions or your comments as we talk about answering the objections of unbelievers with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. Here's an idea. Why not give a non-Christian friend, a relative, a coworker, a tape of this two-hour broadcast with Dr. Montgomery on answering the objections of unbelievers? Here's how you can go about getting that free tape of both hours. Get a pen and a piece of paper ready, because you should hear an announcement with a phone number and a mailing address for the local church that sponsors Issues, etc. They'll send you a free cassette recording of both hours. Now, you should hear contact information for the local church that sponsors Issues, etc., right after the Issues, etc. close theme. You know, if you don't hear that contact information, here's a good idea. Pick up the phone and call the local church near you, the local Lutheran church, and ask them to sponsor Issues, etc. We'll be right back with your questions. Stay tuned.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, etc.
international human rights attorney and law professor Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the importance of issues, etc.
Before settling in England and France, I had my own Christian radio program for 10 years in California and 2 years in Washington State. I was also a regular for over a decade on national religious television. In a word, I have had a great deal of contact with evangelical programming, both good and bad, and my judgment in this area is probably worth something. In my opinion, Issues Etc. is one of the very few programs on Christian radio willing to discuss tough questions with solid theological answers. I consider it a great privilege to be able to appear on the program regularly, and I commend it to every serious listener.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift this week. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can make a credit card donation by calling our resource line at 1-800-737-0172.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Thanksgiving is upon us, and I was put in mind of a decent prayer, a good prayer of Thanksgiving. There's so many of them in this little book that I'm going to read from here, but just listen to this for a second. I thank you, Heavenly Father, because you redeemed me when I was lost and condemned, caught in the jaws of hell. You removed me by the blood of your Son. I was a slave to Satan. But by your grace you freed me from the dominion of the devil and placed me in the kingdom of Christ. I am entirely indebted to you because you formed me in my entirety. How much more am I indebted to you because of the redemption that you worked from servitude and captivity to sin? That's just a little piece of a prayer of thanksgiving for redemption through Christ that's found in our Issues Etc. book of the month for November called Meditations on Divine Mercy, by Johann Gerhardt. Therein you will find Christ-centered devotional material that is simply lacking in so much of modern devotional material for Christians. Now, if you'd like to order our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, you can order it by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours. Their number, 1-800-325-3040. The book costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can browse before you buy by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Click on that What's New section. You'll find information on Meditations on Divine Mercy, issuesetc.org. When you call or write, be sure to mention Issues Etc. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November is Meditations on Divine Mercy by Johann Gerhardt, 1-800-325-3040. Now, our call-in number, 1-800-730-2727. 10 more minutes left in this hour with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. Will is on the line from Minneapolis, listening on KKMS. Will, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. Dr. Montgomery, I'm not an atheist as commonly understood. I am a biblical skeptic. First of all, I have to say I admire you for your work in human rights and for always being a gentleman, but I find too many problems in the Bible, even though I admire much that is in the Bible. I'll start with the following problem. It seems to me that the Christmas stories in Matthew and Luke have all the earmarks of having been concocted after the event. And I'll illustrate the problem as follows. Suppose when Charles Lindbergh was running for office, then for the first time in history, we hear of his famous flight. And up till that time, nobody had heard of it. And this story was presented for the first time when he was running for office. Well, now, all the spectacular events of the Christmas stories should have inspired people to keep a close eye on this remarkable baby and follow his life. But we hear nothing of his life up until he's came on the scene suddenly as a brilliant and a spectacular speaker.
Will, thank you very much. That's one that I didn't anticipate. Dr. Montgomery, your response.
Yes, well, the accounts of Jesus' birth that you find in Matthew and Luke
of course, appear in exactly the same materials that give us all our other information about Jesus. And as we've already said, those accounts are very early, and we have extrinsic evidence they were written by the people who had immediate contact with Jesus. Thus, Papias, who was a student of the Apostle John, tells us that Matthew's gospel was written by Matthew Levi, the tax collector, who was an apostle. And thus, materials of this kind were in circulation while hostile witnesses were around who had taken the trouble to get rid of Jesus. They crucified him, right, or had him crucified. Now, surely, if these accounts, including the accounts of Jesus' birth, had been inaccurate and had been constructed, if they were a mythology that had been created after the fact, that would have been a wonderful means by which the hostile witnesses could have destroyed the Christian faith. And they were never able to do this. We have no counter evidence to that effect. Obviously, Matthew and the other people who were Jesus' disciples had immediate contact with Mary, and therefore they had this information from the person who knew more about it than anybody else. So this is primary historical information. What makes people nervous, such as our listener, probably is that this is an out-and-out miracle, a virgin birth. But you know, if you go back to Isaiah, that was predicted hundreds of years before the coming of Christ. And don't let some of the modern translations disturb you where they speak of a young woman bearing a son. That's not very surprising. If you check the Hebrew, you'll find that the word Alma, that word, was translated even before the Christian era into the Greek word Parthenos, which means virgin and only virgin. So the proper translation of the Isaiah prophecy is that a virgin shall conceive. And that's exactly what's set forth in Matthew and Luke. And if one comes back with the fact that these genealogies don't sound like they're the same, they seem to be in conflict. One of those genealogies, of course, is the official genealogy of Joseph. That's the genealogy that appears in Matthew. Matthew is writing as a Jew for Jews, and the genealogy of a person will always be that of his legal father, whereas Luke, the physician, is providing the genealogy of Mary, the actual human parent of Jesus. So there are no contradictions there. The stuff comes from people who had immediate contact with the events, and the only other thing that could be said about it is that miracles make us feel uncomfortable. But you know, if there is solid enough evidence that Jesus rose again from the dead and claimed to be God Almighty, and the resurrection establishes this, it isn't very surprising that he came into the world in a very special way.
1-800-730-2727. George is on the line. We have a very brief few moments to take his call from New Orleans. He's listening on WSHO. George, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello.
Hi, George.
I wanted to ask him, I said, when you've witnessed to people who are attacking, like Genesis chapter 1, like the subject of creation versus evolution, and you present the evidence of creation to these people, and they constantly try to attack what you're saying, what's the best way to deal with these people?
Good question, George. Dr. Montgomery, no more than a minute to answer George's question before we wrap this up.
Okay. What you need to do is to get them off of that subject. You want to point out that whether evolution or six-day creation turns out to be the proper understanding, neither of those theories gets anybody into heaven or gets them right with God. They need to meet Jesus Christ. And once they have been taken to his death and his resurrection and his great love for us, once they've come into a personal relationship with him, they'll accept his view of the Bible. He took a view of the Old Testament that it was absolutely reliable in every respect. Then they'll begin to look at the first chapters of Genesis in a much more serious way than they ever have before. Don't try to refute evolution unless you've got a Ph.D. in microbiology.
Folks, we're coming to you live this Sunday evening. It's November the 23rd. We will continue to take your phone calls for Dr. Montgomery in the next hour. We'll also be giving away some copies of Dr. Montgomery's book, Tractatus Logico-Theologicus, to the best callers in the next hour. The number, 1-800-730-2727. As I said at the beginning of this hour, atheists, agnostics, skeptics, other non-Christians, you will get top priority among our callers. 1-800-730-2727. You can always post a question or a comment on the Issues Etc. forum, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section. You'll find the forum there. You can also tune in live in the next hour on the Internet. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the worldwide KFUO logo that you find there. You won't be able to listen to this next hour on the radio. It's only on the Internet, issuesetc.org. Click on the KFUO logo you find. Again, our number, call during this break, 1-800-730-2727, 1-800-730-2727. And as I mentioned, the best callers in the next hour get a copy of Dr. John Warwick Montgomery's book, Tractatus Logico-Theologicus. There are objections, many objections, and yet one fact of history stands to refute them all. And we return to it again and again and again, centered in that question of who is Jesus? Who did he say he is? And did he verify his identity as God in human flesh, the sacrifice for sin, and the Savior of the world, the one mediator between God and man? Did he verify his identity by doing what he said he would do? And he's very clear about this in plain language. Dying and rising again. If he didn't, he's a fraud. But he did. Therefore, he is who he says he is. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.